This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, disruptive predictions for the new year. First up, the violins of hope. Israeli violin maker Amnon Weinstein and his son Avshi, for the past two decades, have been restoring these instruments played by musicians during the Holocaust. Later this month, the Holocaust and Humanities Center is going to present a community performance featuring nine of these Holocaust-era violins. The instruments will be played by some of Cincinnati's finest musicians. Joining us to discuss Violins of Hope are Holocaust and Humanities Center Executive Director Sarah Weiss, Evans Mirages, the Harry T. Wilkes Artistic Director of the Cincinnati Opera, and Avshi Weinstein, who will be hand-carrying the nine violins to Cincinnati for the January 23rd performance. You can join our conversation with your questions at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Avshi, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure.
And Evans, good to see you today.
Thank you
for being
Always
here.
Always a pleasure being in
the Sarah, team. And thank you for being
Great
here
to
as
be
well.
Here.
Avshi, explain to us how Violins of Hope, how the project itself got its start.
The first Violins of Hope activity was actually done in Dresden, Germany, in 1999. In the beginning of the 90s, my father had an apprentice from Dresden, Eastern Germany, who came to work with him in our workshop in Israel. And in Dresden and in Eastern Europe, we never learned about the Holocaust. We learned about the war, but the Jewish Holocaust was never mentioned. And when he was working with my father, he saw many of the survivors. He saw some of the founding members of the what then was the Palestine Orchestra, later to become the Israeli Philharmonic. And he saw that we have lots of German instruments in the collection, some of which you couldn't really see much in Germany. And he asked my father, he said, how could it be that in such a small country you have this kind of instrument? And my father told him all the story of the orchestra, how Bronislaw Huberman, in the beginning of the 30s, after the rise of the Nazis, he decided to try and save Jewish people by making an orchestra in Israel and then bringing the musicians. And actually all the musicians and their family members that he brought to Israel, they were all saved, over 3,000 people, they said. And after the war, all these people who some of them had a very good German instrument. Nobody in Israel wanted to do anything with anything German, with music, with art, with electronics, with cars, and they would sell it on. And my grandfather bought it, and this is how we had a collection, which was basically worthless. So he convinced my father to give a lecture to the German violin makers about this instrument. And later, my father went on a radio show in Israel. This show used to connect people. People would go on air, say, I'm coming from this and that area, and I had a sister or brother or parents or other family members, and if someone would know them, then they would call back and try to make the connection. And my father asked for instruments with stories from the Holocaust. And we started getting more and more and more instruments, and today we have about 65 instruments.
65? And I should explain that Avshi is calling us from Turkey, which is why the line is not exactly the clearest. The first actual concert
of Violins of Hope was here in Turkey.
Wow.
Sarah, talk a little bit about the significance of these violins. I mean, these violins have some stories to tell, don't they?
Yeah, these violins all have a story to tell. Some of them we know. Some of them are unknown. But some of the violins, one violin we're getting, for example, was thrown off a train in France as the person was being deported and threw their train out the window and said, where I go, I have no need for this. Some of these violins were played in camps and ghettos. Some of the owners survived. Some did not. And they each have a story to tell. Many of them were played, obviously, before the Holocaust as well, and were part of the rich Jewish life in Europe that existed there.
Mm-hmm. Evans, who's going to be performing with these instruments when Avshi gets them into Cincinnati?
It's a who's who of the area's finest musicians. Louis Langres is leading the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra. To conclude the program, he volunteered during a busy week that he's here conducting a full symphony concert to, and donating his fee, by the way, to conduct the finale of this concert. Also, the Cincinnati Chamber Orchestra will be on the program with its music director, Eckhart Proy, opening the concert. It's the first time the CSO and the CCO have appeared in any concert together, so that's kind of historic, and it's wonderful. And in the newly restored music hall, so we'll be able to hear music of more intimate nature and music of much grander nature all in the same concert. But in between, we're featuring different kinds of music, most of it associated with the Jewish tradition, but played by a variety of musicians. Michael Chertok, who is the orchestra's pianist as well as a celebrated soloist in the area, will accompany Ilya Finkelstein, who is the principal cellist of the CSO, playing the Kol Nidre of Max Bruch. A very gifted young baritone, Simon Barad, who is often performed with Cincinnati Opera, will be joined by his wife, Ksenia Polistyana, to sing two songs from the Jewish and Yiddish tradition. One is a prayer for the dead, El Malei Rachamim, and then the other one is a hilarious and delightful piece from the klezmer tradition called Yosel de Klezmer. Now, if you know anything about klezmer music, these were bands that were mostly in Eastern Europe that were itinerant. They'd go to whatever village or shtetl that was needed to, they were having a wedding or a bar mitzvah or some sort of celebration. And the band usually had a virtuoso clarinet player and a virtuoso violinist. The other instruments varied, but the violin was the king of them all. And Yosel de Klezmer is the story of one of the great klezmer violinists. It's made up, of course. But okay. It says that whenever Yosel performs, everybody dances like waves in the sea. And someday when Yosel goes to heaven and stands before God, he will be afraid, like all of us will be before the judgment. But somewhere in that chorus of angels, someone will say, "Hey, there's Yosel de Klezmer. He should be playing here in heaven." The other parts of the concert include members of the Ariel String Quartet, who will be playing a Prokofiev duo for two violins, as well as during many points in the course of the evening, there will be commentary from narrators as well as a wonderful testimony from Henry Meyer, one of the founding members of the LaSalle Quartet, longtime Cincinnati resident, Holocaust survivor. His story alone is a miracle. And to have a solo violinist on that program is extremely important. And a very gifted young Israeli-born violinist, protege of Itzhak Perlman by the name of Giora Schmidt, will be performing the Saint-Saëns introduction in Rondo Capriccioso. So it's a very varied program with lots of stars and lots of great music.
So, Evans, how does it feel to be performing with such historically significant instruments as these violins?
I can't speak for it myself because I'm not performing on one of them, but I've talked to some people who have played in the Cleveland Orchestra concert a couple of years ago where this same project came to Cleveland. The Cleveland Orchestra had, I think, maybe 20 violins on that occasion, and they played a concert where many of the members of the orchestra, of course, took the violins as ensemble members, and the celebrated solo violinist Shlomo Mintz played the Mendelssohn Concerto. And the two or three people I talked to in Cleveland said, it's a humbling experience. Mm. He said, you have to remember, these are not Stradivarius violins. These are not, the world-class soloist violins that you would see in front of a major symphony orchestra.
Violins of very humble origins, perhaps.
Well, yeah. Some of them of humble origins. Certainly, many of them are extremely well-made. Many of them 19th century German violins, as Avshi can tell you. But they felt humbled because not only were they recreating an instrument that had potentially been stilled forever. I think if you talk to any musician, one of the things they say is one of the greatest crimes is to have an instrument that isn't played. I played clarinet in junior high school and high school. And when I decided to stop playing when I went to college, the first thing I did was give away my clarinets because I didn't want them to sit in a closet never played again. An instrument must be alive and be performed on. And so for me, one of the greatest things about these concerts and about the project in general is that these instruments that could have been stilled forever are alive again and carrying on the traditions and the hopes and the dreams of those men and women, many of whom who did not survive to play in them after World War II.
Yeah, Ms. Sarah, talk some more about the musicians who played in the camps, that they had almost full orchestras in some of these camps, these concentration camps and death camps.
Many of them. Yeah. Auschwitz in particular had several orchestras. They had orchestras in the main camp. They had orchestras in Birkenau. And Henry Meyer, who's a local survivor, was a member of the Auschwitz Orchestra. And these orchestras were to perform both for those going to work on work duty, and sometimes they were ordered to perform for SS officers and other camp guards and others throughout the camp system. Henry Meyer says in his testimony that the Nazis can't do anything without music. And he talks about the role in the way music was manipulated or abused. But also for the musicians like Henry and others, music was such a source of inspiration. And, you know, Henry also said music kept me alive. It kept me going, that he could play in this orchestra, even though it was in this horrific, unimaginable place as people were being marched to forced labor or even to death, still that he could be a musician and he can lose himself for a moment in music.
There's one piece on the concert in particular that is in of itself a beautiful protest to the brutality of incarceration. Yeah. And it is by a composer by the name of Gideon Klein. Eckhart Preu, who was involved in selecting the music that the chamber orchestra is going to play, suggested this piece himself. It's a partita for strings, and it's derived from a string trio that was actually written in the Terezin concentration camp outside of Prague. You have to understand that Terezin, or Theresienstadt, as it's known in Germany, was a camp that was established for political prisoners during the reign of Emperor Joseph II. Now, if you know that name, that's Mozart's patron. So this was a political prisoners' camp until the Nazis invaded and took over the Czech lands. They immediately turned it into a moderately secure camp. And in diabolical ways, they rounded up all of the Czech-speaking intelligentsia, as well as many Germans, and put them in that camp. And then advertised, even using the Red Cross, to say, you see, Hitler has given the Jews a city. All these wonderful artists and performers have a place where they can live and work and create. It was really just a way station to Auschwitz. But in this almost Kafkaesque atmosphere for 4 years, men and women created new music. There were 30 performances of the Verdi Requiem in Theresienstadt, organized by inmates with an upright piano. Countless pieces of music were created for the inmates themselves to play, and one of them was a string trio by Gideon Klein, one of four famous composers who was incarcerated in the camp, that eventually, after the war, was turned into this partita for string orchestra. So even the music that we're playing on this concert has this air of not only history, but air of hope about it, that even in the most dismal, horrible situations, art survives and is created.
We will continue our conversation about Violins of Hope, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to discuss Violins of Hope are Holocaust and Humanities Center Executive Director Sarah Weiss, Evans Mirages, the Harry T. Wilkes Artistic Director of the Cincinnati Opera, and Avshi Weinstein, who will be hand-carrying the nine violins to Cincinnati for the January 23rd performance. You can join us with your questions, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Avshi, you said that you've restored 65 violins. How did you and your father go about locating these violins? How did they come into this particular collection?
Well, first of all, some of the instruments that we had from the founders of the Palestine Orchestra, which were sold to my grandfather, that was the first seed of the collection. And later on, when my father went on the radio and we started doing projects and people started hearing about us, we start getting more and more instruments. And we have lots of violin maker friends around the world who knows about the project. And lately, a few years ago, one of the most special violins that we got, the violin was originally bought by a violin maker in Washington, D.C. area. And he bought this violin. He wanted to do a small restoration and then sell it. And when he actually opened the violin, he saw that someone wrote inside Heil Hitler 1936 with a very strong swastika.
Wow.
Now, his first intention was to burn it, but then he did what anyone else would do during our age, and he just went to Google, and somehow he found us. He called my father and he asked if we would like to have the violin in the collection. We said immediately, of course, yes. And he sent it over to us. And this is one of the only handful of instruments that we will never restore, because his story is stronger told when you have the Heil Hitler inside. And if I will restore it, we will lose all this signature, this what this guy wrote, but who basically he violated the violin. Mm. Let's say it this way.
Wow, that is just that's such a compelling story. Does each of the violins have its own unique story, Avshi?
Some of them do, some of them don't. Some instruments that we have, they have Star of David on the back, which we believe they were all used by klezmers. And some of these instruments are in such a condition that you see that they were played in the open weather, under storm or snow or rain, during conditions that a normal musician would never put his instrument to be played on because it's too dangerous. So they had to play. And when you have to play, you play, no matter what. So we don't really know the previous owners, but you can see on the condition and the situation of the instruments that they, some of them went through something and some of them never probably been through the war. They are older than 1940s, but they haven't been probably in Europe during the war.
How much work does it take to restore these violins? I mean, some of these are, what, 7-8 decades old at least?
Oh, even much more.
Yeah.
But it really depends on the condition. We had a violin which was almost 2 years of restoration, for example. Some of them are faster because they're in a better condition. It really, really differs between each one.
And some of them, you do know the stories, right, Avshi? I mean, some of them have been given to you, and you know they were, in some cases, one that was in a camp with a victim the whole time, and he survived with it, right? Several of those as well.
Yes. We know we have few instruments which went through camps. We have an instrument that the owner was in a camp, and later the Nazis released him because of his sister, who was married to a Quaker, and he had to run through Europe, going on an illegal immigrant's boat to Israel, captured by the British, deported to Mauritius for the war, and only after that he managed finally to reach Israel.
Yeah.
What is this?
There are many stories.
Avshi, what is this meant to you and your father? I mean, what feelings and what emotions do you get out of this as you do this work and you go through this project?
I mean, I'm sure Sarah can tell you as good as I can, but there are a few type of, let's say, survivors. I come from both sides. My father's side, my grandfather and my grandmother, they left in 1938, and they left behind, each one of them, 11 sisters and brothers. And only one of the brothers of my grandfather survived. All the rest, including their families, they were all killed. Between 350 to 380 family members were all killed. My mother's side is, in a way, the complete opposite story. I know Sarah knows, but I'm not so sure if you know, but there was a movie in the States with Daniel Craig called Defiance, about three brothers who went to the wood and saved over 1,200 Jews. My grandfather was one of the brothers. And although he joined the Red Army after they were released, and unfortunately he was killed just weeks before the end of the war, whenever I would go to my grandmother, I would hear the stories of the woods. And on the other hand, when we would go to my father's parents, they never spoke a word about their families, about the war, about anything. For me, I can deal with this because I heard so many stories about the war, so it's something which I read about it and I can deal with it and I can understand it. But for my father, it was a very difficult situation to go and deal with it, because he never dealt with it when he was a child. His parents never talked about their family. He basically had no family growing up. When I had, I don't know, nobody actually knows all our family. I don't think there is a single person who knows all the rest of the family. So it's very, very different between people.
That sounds like a lot of deep emotions attached to these.
One of the things that happens when the Violins of Hope come to a city is that many visits to schools are planned. And I know the Center for Holocaust and Humanity is doing several school visits in the days before. And Avshi, I'd like to ask you, what's been some of the most amazing reactions you've gotten from school kids when you present them with something which they probably haven't studied a thing about in their schoolwork?
Well, we live in a strange world. People say that there is a saying, live in interesting times. I think our time is as interesting as any other time. And my feeling as someone who lives in Israel, someone who was born and raised in Israel, I live in Turkey now, but I see news from all over the world and I hear news from all over the world. And there is a very big problem, if at least in my opinion. The way people stopped talking to each other, they talk parallel. They don't try to convince. They don't try to be convinced. They don't open their mind. They don't want to hear or understand that they are, that we are all human beings, but we are all different as well. And this is, for me, we try to show that even in the darkest hours, the people had hope. Their hope was that if they go on playing, they might survive. We have a violin that the owner played day in and day out, sometimes for 2 or 3 days in festivals, just to get the leftovers. And in this way, he managed to save 16 people during the war. And this is something which, unfortunately, people might learn about the war, but they learn numbers, they learn statistics. None of us really knows how does 6 million people look like? How many football fields do you need to fill up in order to have 6 million people? But when you talk about the war with individual stories, and you can hear the sounds that those people heard when they were during this time, it gives you a different feeling and a different approach to the kids and to adults, and hopefully brings a message that we all have to sit down and talk in the end.
Yeah, obviously hearing you talk about it just brings out so many feelings here too as well. That's just an incredible story. Sarah, tell us again about the performance that's coming up. Give us the details
on that. Violins of Hope will be in Cincinnati on Tuesday, January 23rd. There's a student performance at 10 a.m. at Music Hall, and there's an evening public performance at 7:30 p.m. And we're thrilled that through the work with Evans, that we've been able to put together a partnership with the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra and Cincinnati Chamber Orchestra and the Ariel Quartet and Giora Schmidt as a soloist and many of our cities, really our city's finest musicians. And we'll have, as you heard, several of these violins, each with a story to tell, and we'll be sharing their stories throughout that concert as well.
Avshi, you're actually bringing the violins to Cincinnati. What? How much care goes into transporting these?
Actually, not much. Most of it is done by the pilots. Of course, I mean, we have to get them ready. We have to do all the necessary paperwork, not to be stopped by customs. And I have a small role in that. But the main part is going to be done by the pilots and the driver. So I'm just the working labor.
And I want to emphasize that this concert is not some sort of memorial. This is music, all of it great music, and much of it filled with such joy and the hope that both Avshi and Sarah have talked about today. It's going to be a tremendous evening of uplifting and beautiful music.
Yeah.
Well, Evans, thank you for joining us today. Afshi, thank you. We appreciate hearing from you. And Sarah, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
The Humanities Center Executive Director, Sarah, the Holocaust and Humanities Center Executive Director, Sarah Weiss, Evans Mirajas, who is the Harry T. Wilkes Artistic Director of the Cincinnati Opera, and Afshi Weinstein, who is going to hand carry those nine violins to Cincinnati for that performance on January 23rd. You can find a link to more information about that performance at wvxu.org.